Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. By joining Washington's Ukraine proxy war against Russia, Europe has made an irreversible choice. It has consigned itself to being a minor regional power in a multipolar world. Cutting itself off from Russia, Europe has all but assured it will be overtly dependent on the United States. That dependency will be costly. Crosshacking Europe's Choice, I'm joined by my guest, Vasily Fuskos, in London. He is professor of international relations at the University of East London, as well as editor of the Journal of Balkan and Near Eastern Studies. In North Florida, we have Tom Luongo. He is publisher of Gold Goats and Guns blog and newsletter. And in Prague, we have Brad Blankenship. He is a columnist at CGTN, a freelance reporter at Xinhua, as well as an RT contributor. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Tom, let me go to you first in North Florida. Did I overstate my introduction that Europe is consigning itself to be a regional, minor regional power in a multipolar world? It's getting pretty bleak for the European future, I would say. Your thoughts, Tom?
Yeah, I would agree with you on that, Peter. The issue for Europe is that it's very clear that that Russia's done with them, and that's the bigger issue. Knowing that this oil price cap has gone into place, the funny part now is that, you know, the headlines are all being written that Russia's going to have to cut production, and this is going to hurt their bottom line, blah 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 blah, and it's always framed in terms of how bad it is for Russia, but nobody actually talks about whether Putin has actually game planned for this, whether it's now a strategic move, because as far as I'm concerned, after the recent drone strikes inside Russia, we're looking at the, you know, de facto start for a major kinetic war, and if I'm Putin, I'm not selling oil under any circumstances to my enemies.
Okay, Vasily, in London, basically the same question here, because I like how what Tom said in the beginning of his answer is that, you know, the Russians have had it with the Europeans, okay? But obviously in Western media, it's always framed in the opposite way here. But Tom's absolutely right. I mean, they need reliable partners. Europe has shown itself to be unreliable, particularly in energy. We had former Chancellor Merkel come out and basically say, yeah, the Minsk processes were just a ploy. They're showing their hand. They're showing their really gross dishonesty. The Russians are done with them, okay? Now the Europe has to pay the price. Go ahead, in London.
Yes, thanks. I don't disagree with what I heard, especially with your introduction, Peter, but also what Tom said. But what I would like just to give, to take a different tack in all that, in this discussion with, in the triangle between US, Europe, and Russia. Has really ever been Europe an independent political actor in global affairs? I doubt it. It was always dependent on the United States, militarily and politically. Even the introduction of the euro was pretty much a project encouraged by the United States. So this core-to-core relationship between Europe and the United States, a very strong alliance, in terms of trade as well, in terms of foreign direct investment, et cetera, et cetera. This has always been strong, but on United States terms. And exactly. What the United States wanted always to do, it was to exclude Russia from that project. I mean, since the end of the Second World War, that was the United States project to exclude Russia from European affairs. So in that respect, if my analysis is correct, I think that Russia, despite all the price cap put on it, despite we can discuss later on if you want, Russia should never stop talking to Europe. Never. That's my understanding of the situation. Particularly now, in a period in which globalization seems, as we know it, seems to be at the end or at an end. We need also to factor in China, you know, in this war.
Well, Vasily, you're getting way ahead of me. That's on my checklist of questions right.
Sorry,
here. Okay, great minds think alike. Okay, Brad, basically the same question. But you know, Brad, Vasily says that, you know, Russia needs to keep talking to Europe. But I mean, if Europe wants to control the conversation, what is the point of having a conversation? Okay, I mean, it has to be a two-way street. street. It's not that way right now. I don't see it's going to be that way for a very, very long time. Go ahead, Brad.
You know, I can see that that's true because, you know, I think that there is this kind of innate desire from people within Europe to be politically autonomous, even though their entire political system through the EU has been beholden to the United States. But at the same time, the politicians here lack the courage to stand up to Washington, even though they know that Washington is undermining their interests. But ironically, at the same time, these EU politicians, these pro-EU, pro-Western politicians that are putting Europe down this path, they don't really have any leverage here. I mean, there's kind of this running joke now in Europe that we're going to be, you know, like a summer holiday destinations for the Chinese and the Americans because the industry here is going to be completely gutted. I mean, without cheap Russian energy, industry in Central Europe and Germany is completely screwed. I mean, you know, when you look at central banks all over the world use energy usage as a primary predictor of economic growth. And we've seen that the demand for energy has gone down. And that at the same time, EU politicians are saying that this is a positive thing, that we're, you know, building up our gas supplies in case Russia halts the flow of energy to Europe. But that's a bad thing. That means economic growth here is going to go down. That means we're going to be in a recession for years, if not decades, potentially, without, you know, cheap Russian energy that we can use for industry here. And I don't see that these politicians have any leverage. And I think that this is going to usher in just the deindustrialization of Europe as a result.
Well, again, great minds think alike. That was going to be my question for Tom. Is this an intentional plan to deindustrialize Europe on the part of the Americans, Tom?
I don't think it's the Americans solely that's doing this. This is the great heresy on my part. I'm sorry. As an American, I see the old colonial hand of Europe desperately trying to hold sway over the way they run. They use us as the tip of the spear. I really think that this whole thing is ideologically driven by the Europeans. They're the ones out there screaming about European values and democracy. We have to save democracy by destroying it and all the rest of it. If you look at people like von der Leyen and Michel and Borrell and the rest of them, they're all ideologues for this thing. And the Americans are simply their cynical ground troops. And that's the way I see this. And it's almost impossible to get me off of this point at this point. I think it's very important that we stop just framing all of this as, oh, look, it's the evil Americans pushing everybody
around. Well, I mean, but Tom,
it's far deeper than that. This is important. Europe is absolutely... They're lockstep with the European, on this. They want this war as much as everybody else.
Okay,
does.
But who blew up the pipelines then, Vasilis? Okay, I mean, obviously the U.S. benefited greatly from that at the cost of the Germans and the cost of Europeans. Let me go to my guest in London.
The Germans went along with it because the German Green Party wants to do away with
gas. Guest in London, Vasilis. What do you think about that? Because it gave the Americans enormous leverage by having those pipelines blow up. Go ahead, in London.
Exactly. I mean, the real winner of this war obviously is the United States because it increased its grip on Europe. It blocked completely Germany from Russian oil and gas and Europe as well. But at the same time, the United States, on the other hand, protects itself from inflation and subsidizes its economy, making its companies more competitive. Witness the $430 billion Inflation Reduction Act. I mean, the United States is very much a conscientious actor in all this, wants to disengage European energy policy from Russia completely and have the Europeans buying the expensive LNG, which is not even enough. That's why Russian gas and oil is continuing to be pumped up to Europe. Although they capped it now, they put the price cap, but even this is not enough. I don't think we're going to do much if you want to discuss this later on. And Russia has many alternatives to that, but my initial point, I think, it should be taken on board. Why? Because it depends, Peter, what kind of solution we want on Europe for that war. Do you want an American solution, or do you want a solution which is marked by the is stamped by Europeans and Russians and Chinese? you want a European Eurasian solution or an American solution? That's the key question to answer.
Brad, that's a very interesting question. We'd like to field it. Go ahead.
I think that, you know, this question of whether or not the Europeans or the Americans or whoever is running the show, it's for sure the Americans. I mean, you know, it's definitely true that the Europeans, I mean, that America is definitely a product of the colonialist and imperialist ideologies that emerge in Europe that are indigenous to this continent here. But the United States is the crystallization of that. I mean, like the Nazis said that the greatest moment in the history of white power is the creation of the United States of America. Everything that is wicked about the West is rampant in Washington. And the solution that they're putting forward is everything that's evil and dastardly about the West. That's the solution they're putting forward. It's domination. You know, when Joe Biden gives a speech at TSMC, the new headquarters that's opening in the United States, and says that we're putting out American products, this is not just a signal to the Chinese, you know, that there's a trade war against China. This is also talking about South Korea. This is talking about Japan. This is talking about Europe, especially. You know, the deindustrialization of Europe will benefit America with, as the other guests mentioned, the Inflation Act. Yeah, you know, the United States is setting themselves up to benefit greatly from the deindustrialization of Europe and the destitution that's going to come on this continent here, even though supposedly we're lockstep, supposedly we are, you know, equal partners with the Americans, but that's not true.
Well, I mean,
one side is paying, hang on, guys.
I have to go to a break, production. Gentlemen. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Europe's choice. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Europe's choice. Okay, let's go back to Tom in North Florida. It's already been brought up in this program, and I think it's really worth talking about more. Are we experiencing the end of globalization as we've understood it for the last half century? Because it seems to me that with this gambit that the U.S. is playing vis-a-vis Russia and using the proxy war in Ukraine, is that the U.S. wants to go on in its own controlled globalization, which Europe would be part of. And there'll be other globalizations. China we can talk about as well. It seems to me that there is a parting of the waters, as it were. Go ahead, Tom, in North Florida.
I agree with all of that. I also think, most of it. What I really think is going on here, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to absolve the Americans for their part in what's happening out here. It's clear that that's what's going on. I just don't want anybody to think that Europe didn't make a conscious choice here, that the perceived weakness of European leaders is as being subordinate or vassals to the United States. It's just nonsense. It's not real. So when you look at what's happening, what I think is happening is very clearly that there are forces within the United States that are working to try and save what's left of what's been hollowed out over here, while others are still trying to sell it out. I think the Biden administration is trying to sell it out. I think we've seen a push by the Federal Reserve and the New York Money Center banks in order to stop that process at least somewhat. And we see with the end of globalization, with the clear end of the dollar reserve standard on the horizon, there is a breaking of the system, and Europe is going to be left in the dust. And it's in geopolitics, there are no allies, there are only interests. And as far as I'm concerned, you install a fungus like Biden for the purposes of doing tax normalization with Europe's ruinous tax policy, energy policy that's in lockstep with COP27 and all of that stuff. Like, at the end of the day, I don't see the Biden administration as working for the United States. And I think this is part of the real disconnect here. And that's the issue for me. In the end, I see all of these things happening. I don't disagree with the guests on the big trend. I just don't think that the Americans are the sole evil empire here. I think that's a very dangerous narrative, and letting the Europeans off the hook for their complicity in this because they want to do this. The destruction of the middle class in Europe is not a bug. It's not a bug created by the Americans. It's a feature of what Europe wants to do to transform itself into the next version of the USSR, because that's what the EU is becoming.
Well, I mean,
undemocratic, Politburo-led, monstrosity.
I absolutely agree with that here. But one thing, if I can go back to our guest in London, I mean, there's one commonality here. I mean, who's a top of the totem pole? We can all discuss that until we're all blue in the face. But they do have one thing in common. Is ideology. They're all ideologically possessed, this neoliberal ideology. That is one thing that they all have in common here. And it's disastrous for middle classes all across the Western world. Go ahead in London.
Okay, yes, thanks. So, look, I can't say I disagree with what I heard, but it's important that we get our priorities right. Who is the dominant power today in the global system, in the West? European Union or the United States? The European Union does not even qualify to be called a state. It's not, doesn't have federal structure. It has some primitive federal structures, but it doesn't have a fiscal unity. There is not even a union of the banking sector after the massive banking crisis we had, the Eurozone crisis. So European Union can be very well defined as an international organization, more or less, a bit more tight than the United Nations as such. So we don't deal here with a unified actor. That should be taken on board. That is so crucial. It is also so crucial to understand that NATO in Europe institutionalized the dependency of Europe upon the United States. The voice here, the voice the Europeans have, is pretty much a voice of the elites of European business interests with the elites of the United States business interests, and also taking into account security calculations. So do not be surprised if I tell you that so many splits there are within the European Parliament, the European Commission, and so on. There is no one voice. That's why I keep saying, keep talking to the Europeans if you don't want to play the US game of excluding Russia from European affairs. Russia should not be excluded from European affairs.
Well, okay, but Vasilis, who's excluding whom here? It's Europe that is excluding Russia, okay? Not the other way around, okay? To a finer point here, as you've already said on this program, Russian energy is still going to Europe, okay? They didn't cut it off. It's the Europeans that are cutting off Russian energy here. Let me go to Brad Let me go to Brad in Prague here. One of the things that we're hearing is that the Americans want the Europeans to go along with their policies against China. That's not going to go down very well in Europe, Brad.
Yeah, I just wrote a piece about this. And in fact, you find people like Josep Borrell even have the courage to say that European countries don't want to have to choose between Beijing or Washington. And that's because it's just in their plain self-interest. I mean, China has a lot to offer the European Union. China's consumer market within the next decade will be bigger than the United States. And they are hungry for European goods. I mean, as long as those goods are cheap and not, completely screwed on price because the Russian energy is not accessible to the EU market, of course. But, there's a lot of fruitful cooperation there. And, I think that a lot of NATO allies are not lockstep on this. I think I would like to comment with the other guests that I think we also definitely have to be very crystal clear that Europe is butting out Russia, but that is at the behest of the Americans. I mean, they have tens of thousands of troops here. They spy on European politicians. These are demonstrable facts. We know this. You walk out your door here in Europe and you see it. They are colonizing Europe. Europe is a vassal state of the United States. The EU is not a country. This is disjointed countries that are being forced against each other. And just as the globalization has created a natural relationship between Russia and the EU, integrating both of these economies, I think that there's a natural relationship between the Russian people and people in Europe here. There's a natural political relationship, just as globalization has been fruitful for both sides. Russian energy creating Europe's industrial base. I believe that the Russian people are inextricably connected to people here in Europe, not least because they are European, of course. I think that we have to be clear that it's Washington doing this. And I think that Russia should continue to engage in Europe because Russia needs to be a political actor in Europe. And that's also because the United States, part of its grand strategy is to force it to compete with China by pushing it out of Europe, forcing it to be an Asian power, enforcing China and Russia to compete against each other, perhaps, you know, breaking their strategic cooperation, which would be detrimental to the world. The strategic cooperation between Russia and China is so important in keeping this multipolar world, emerging multipolar world order together, one that is against American hegemony. And that is so important.
Okay, Tom, I saw you nodding your head there. You're in agreement. Go ahead, Tom.
I agree that Russia and China need to stay in lockstep with one another. And in no way did anything Brad just say tells me that that's not going to happen. Look, they just like moved strategic bombers across to each other's air bases, for Christ's sake. Nothing the U.S. is doing is stopping. They're trying desperately to drive a wedge. That's what Pelosi going to Taiwan was about. That's what the CHIPS Act was about. And I get that. But understand that you sitting in Prague, you cannot see what's happening here in the United States, which is our institutions are being destroyed from within from foreign powers. And it's very obvious. None of these people work for the United States. They are all trying to normalize or even make worse our ability to handle capital and make it handle capital worse than they already handle it in Europe. Okay. Because capital flows to where capital is treated best. And right now it's still treated best by the United States. 21% corporate tax rate versus a 26% in France. But Biden wants to raise it to 28. Now, why would he want to do that if he's actually acting in the American interest? He's not. Okay. None of this is about keeping the United States alive. This is about this is about literally breaking up the United States. And too many people are actually going to cheer this. And this is a bad idea. Not that I'm a huge fan of the United States in any way, manner, shape, or form, but all of these things are being driven, as Peter mentioned, as by ideologically possessed people who believe that we can move to a different type of system. Okay. And it's not necessarily just the Americans driving this. It is at the end of the day, whether we are going to have public capital formation or private capital formation. And there are forces within the U.S. that still believe in private capital formation. And the people at the top of our political system are aligned with Europe that we need to have public capital formation, the end of commercial banking, the end of all of that stuff. And this is all the subtext of what's going on with the situation in Ukraine and how it's being handled. But don't kid yourself in any way, manner, shape, or form. This is about the destruction of the United States. And everybody thinks that'll be a great thing. I got news for you. If the United States falls apart in the worst way imaginable, no one is going to be happy about the results. Nobody. Well, not the Russians, not the Chinese, not the Europeans, not anyone.
Well, okay.
Because do you think the end of the USSR was ugly? You just wait to see what happens with the United States.
Well, if it goes down, it's going to take a good part of the world with it. There's no doubt about that, okay? Vasilis, in London, can the European Union survive? Because, you know, the way people talk about getting through this winter. Okay, they're going to get through this winter. It will be uncomfortable, but they will. But what about the next five winters? That's where the real challenge is. Go ahead, in London.
Yeah, Peter, I cannot predict the future. It will be tough for everybody. Okay, and the Europeans have to realize that. And I think the people of Europe understand that this war is wrong, this war has to stop, and European-Russian relations should go back to normal as it were before. I don't think it was in the interest of Germany to blow up the pipelines. I think it was in the interest of the United States to blow up the pipelines. The pipelines, the Northern Stream and so on, these are European-German projects. And this is what the United States wanted to stop. The Europeans know, the elites know very well, but when they speak with American language. That's my point. There is no political unity in Europe to have an independent political discourse, to shape an independent political discourse towards Russia. And it's up to Russia to liberate, to emancipate Europe from America's grip. I mean, in 1997, Brzezinski wrote a book. The purpose of that book, the Grand Chessboard, I'm talking about, the purpose of that book was how to avoid the Americans having to face a situation in which Europe, Moscow, and China will have a united cooperation.
We've run out of time, gentlemen, but I think that's why we have the answer. That's why Ukraine happened in the first place, to address what we just heard in London. That's all the time we have, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in London, Prague, and in North Florida. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.